Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. He also prepared himself to reply to all that King Parikshit had inquired from him. Maharaj Parikshit was the best in the dynasty of the Pandus, and thus he was able to ask the right questions from the right person. So, Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Parikshit asked many questions, some of them very curiously, to know things as they are, but it is not necessary for the master to answer them in the order of the disciples' inquiries. One after the other, but Sukadev Goswami, experienced teacher that he was, answered all the questions in a systematic way, as they were received from the chain of disciplic succession, and he answered all of them without exception. Thus ends the Bhaktivinoda purport of the second canto, 8th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Questions by King Parikshit. Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yad Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyaybacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So begging permission from all the wonderful assembled Vaishnavas and those who are listening online to get their blessings to be able to speak something on this transcendental subject matter, although not feeling qualified. Okay, so this has been a really interesting chapter. We've had many exalted Vaishnavas who have been speaking in the last few weeks, so I don't think I can compare or compete with them. I just, so many amazing discussions have taken place about guru and disciple, about questions and answers, about the whole pastime with Maharaj Parikshit and how he was cursed, and Shukadev Goswami giving him enlightenment as to what's needed at that very important time. So this particular part of the chapter is Sutta Goswami speaking to the sages of Namasharanya, and it's about the regular topics of conversation and behavior of Shukadev Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. So asking the right questions is very important if you want to receive the correct information or and get the correct knowledge. So it's very important to ask the right person. So like sometimes Srila Prabhupada says, you know, if the son, you know, has never met the father, and if the father left home when he was very young, so he could go to the high street and do a survey. He could say, excuse me, sir, are you my father? Are you my father? Are you my father? That's one way to do it. Or the other method is to ask the right person, in which case it would be his mother. And Srila Prabhupada says, like, the Shastra is like our mother, you know. So we can inquire. So to ask the right questions, that's really, really important. But to also ask them to the right people, that's also, it has to be there. And for example, if you want, I met one devotee, and he was having some problems with his car. And so he was just asking around, you know, different people, what do you think is wrong with it? And someone said, well, I think you need to change this. So that was an expensive fix, and it wasn't a fix. So then he asked somebody else, and they said, well, maybe if you, I think you need to change your turbo, you know, which is expensive. So yeah, he went to many different things he tried, but he didn't really ask the right person. And then somebody told him that I know a very good mechanic, you know, and I'll give you his number. Why don't you go there and ask him? So this devotee, he actually went to the mechanic, and he was only there for about 5 or 10 minutes. And the mechanic, he just opened the bonnet and he listened. And then he said, okay, he said, I know what it is. He says, it's this part here, and it's £20. I'll get you tomorrow, you know, and put it in for you. So he had already spent so much money, you know, by asking the wrong people. So like, for example, if you have problem with your teeth, you know, you don't ask the bin man or the shopkeeper. You need to go and ask the dentist, you know. So the right questions for the right people, and then you get, and there's a chance you might get the right answer, you know. I remember in the early 80s, I think it was 1983, 84 or something, and there was one big sannyasi had come from Europe, and he was very famous, and this temple room was jam-packed, full of devotees, and there was one devotee sitting about here. So then he put his hand up, you know, and he said, Maharaj, I've got a question. He says, okay. So Maharaj said, okay, what's your question? So he said, Maharaj, you know, when you get to the spiritual world, do you have to chant? You know? So there was a pause, you know, and everybody was waiting for the answer. And then the sannyasi replied, no, you don't have to worry about that. He said, with an attitude like that, you're not even going to get there. So, do I have to chant? You know. So anyway, he could have asked the right question because the right person was there to give him the knowledge and give him. But he apparently asked the wrong question. an experienced teacher will answer according to the teachings or knowledge coming down in disciplic succession. So in the purport here, Srila Prabhupada writes that Parikshit Maharaj, he was asking the question, and Sukadev Goswami, he answered in a systematic way, and he answered in relationship to the disciplic succession, you know. So he didn't kind of just, you know, make it up as you go along, you know. But he answered in a way that it was in line with the predecessor acharyas, you know. You know, because sometimes people come here, we get so many guests that come and they ask many different questions. So then sometimes you have to tell them, actually, you know, the question you've asked, and the answer I'm going to give you is, I have to tell you the truth, because I've taken a vow to speak the truth, because I'm representing all these divine personalities who are situated in truth, and they are servants of the supreme absolute truth, Param Satyam, Krishna. So then I said, you know, I could try and water it down, or I could try and make it more suitable, palatable for you, but I have to present it according to how they have given it to us, you know. Sometimes I've seen in many different situations, I've been to visit many families, and some of them have been very distressed, so many difficult situations, and you really don't know what to say or what to do there, so you're praying, you know. You're praying to the Vaishnavas and Acharyas and the Lord, please help me, you know. But I found that when you go to places and people are suffering or great, some traumatic things taking place, just sympathizing with them or, you know, just trying to be nice to them, it actually doesn't really help, you know. Many people do that, but they don't. I found actually, like, if you have to speak the truth, but it's an art. You have to speak it in such a way that you don't devastate them, you know. Like that. So anyway, because there's nothing that really helps more than the truth, you know. And we are all situated in that on the path of bhakti, and like I said, we're servants. If we're not situated in truth, there's no question of approaching the absolute truths, Param Satyam, Krishna. So there's a verse which you're all quite familiar with in the Bhagavad Gita, and I'll just read it. Okay, so this one, I think, is a very famous verse, chapter 4, Bhagavad Gita, text 34. Does anyone know what it is? Okay, go on then, Chaitanya Kripa. Excellent, well done. Yeah, Hari Bol. So, and do you know the translation? Very nice, absolutely beautiful. Well done. So, you're a good disciple because you've actually been learning what your spiritual master has been teaching you. So, yeah. So then, this is very important. Like says, you know, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, inquiring from him, submissively rendering service. Tarun Krishna Prabhu, he went into that in his class in a lot of detail. You know, he spent a lot of time with Shivaram Maharaj and. He got chastised many times and he gained many realizations. So he was sharing like what's the relationship between the disciple and the spiritual master. So that service has to be there and submission has to be there. Otherwise, transmission of knowledge and realization will not take place. You know? There's another verse, 158. Okay, 1 second. So this one is from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 2, text 5. Does anybody know that one? 1, 2, 5. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sure many of you are familiar with it because these are quite famous chapters. And it's Sutta Goswami is instructing the sages in Amashranya. Munayo sadu prishtoham bhavad birloka mangalam yad krita krishna samprashno yenatma supersedati. O sages, I've been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. So, really beautiful. And those sages have just been questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. And so, we can ask so many questions, but when we ask questions which are in relationship to Krishna, and ultimately, those questions are in relationships to the welfare of the world, because they say material well-being follows spiritual well-being, you know. So there's so many problems in the world, but our acharyas, they say that, you know, there's no lack of anything apart from Krishna consciousness. You know? So if people were Krishna conscious, and then there would be enough for everyone, and they would actually be developing divine qualities, and the world will be in a much more peaceful state than it is at the moment. So, beautiful verses there. And then, because it's Lord Varaha's appearance day today, we're going to read a little bit about Lord Varaha. Of course, we don't have so much time, but Lord Varaha, he's one of the Dashavatar, and he's really, really amazing, really powerful. Okay. 119. So, this is a verse from first canto, chapter 1, text 19. Vayam tu nad vitripyama utama shloka vikrame yakshinvatam rasagyanam swadhu swadhu pade pade. We never tire of hearing the transcendental pastimes of the personality of Godhead, who is glorified by hymns and prayers. Those who have developed a taste for transcendental relationships with him relish hearing of his pastimes at every moment. So that's the sages to Sutta Goswami. So we never tire of hearing the transcendental pastimes of the personality of Godhead, who is glorified by hymns and prayers. And those who have developed a taste for transcendental relationships with him relish hearing of his pastimes at every moment. So on the auspicious days of the appearance of the Lord, and the on days like Ekadashi, and very, very powerful days are there, and appearance days of great acharyas, it's a great opportunity to get a lot of mercy, you know, from those personalities. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he mentions in one of his songs, which is from Sharan Gati. I won't read the whole song, but I'll just read the first two verses. Shuddha bhakata charana renu bhajana anukula bhakta seva parama siddhi prema latikara mula madhavatiti bhakti janani jatane palana kori krishna basati basati boli parama adhare bori. So I found, you know, these songs of the great Vaishnava acharyas, they're the essence of all the Vedic teachings. All the nectar is just like right there, you know. It's all, because when you sing these songs, or you sit and read them and you meditate on the meanings, it's so powerful. You get the conclusion of all the Vedic teachings. And the translation of those two verses, which is interesting because today is the appearance day of Lord Varaha, so it's the appearance day of the Lord, so, you know, it's a very auspicious, very special day. And then yesterday we had Ekadashi, and tomorrow is also the appearance day of the Lord. It's Lord Nityananda's appearance day. So, Haribo. So, dust from the feet of pure devotees is conducive to devotional service, while service to the Vaishnavas is itself the supreme perfection and the root of the tender creeper of divine love. Shuddha bhakata charana renu bhajana anukul bhakta seva parama siddhi param latir kramul. So bhakta seva, the service to the Vaishnavas, is the param siddhi, is the topmost perfection, you know, and which waters the creeper, tender creeper of devotion. So, you know, wow. And dust from the feet of pure devotees is very conducive to devotional service, you know. So if you want to know how to make quick advancement, you know, here's the secret right there, you know. And then the next part, Madhavatiti Bhakti Janani, it says, I observe with great care the holy days like Ekadashi and Janmashtami, or the appearance day of Lord Varaha, you know, for they are the mother of devotion, you know. So I wonder why Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that these auspicious days and appearance days of the Lord are considered to be like the mother of devotion. Would anybody like to comment? Absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, mother is very kind, mother is very caring, mother nourishes. So, you know, if we are in the right consciousness, when these special days come, we can really, you know, meditate on those divine personalities, and we can really, you know, pray for their mercy, and we can make so much rapid advancement. Otherwise, we could just think, oh, it's just another day, you know, and I've got to fast till midday or something, you know, like that. Or, you know, they say, well, Krishna, he makes you fast till midnight. At least Radharani, she's a bit more merciful. She only makes you fast till noon, you know. So, anyway, it depends how you look at it, you know. It's you know, it's like, oh. So sometimes on a fasting day, somebody says, oh, I'm waiting for the feast. I said, Prabhu, we're feasting on the names today. We're feasting on the names and the fast times. So, you know, Maharaj Parikshit, he became so absorbed in hearing Srimad Bhagavatam on the pastimes of the Lord and hearing the names of the Lord that he wasn't worried about breaking the fast. You know? So anyway, there's some beautiful topics there. So because it's the appearance day of Lord Varaha, he is the boar incarnation, but he's not boring. You know? There's many other people out there that are quite boring. But Lord Varaha, he is actually, you know, when he's fighting with the demon Hiranyaksha, he's actually having fun with him, you know. And sometimes he drops his mace, you know, and or sometimes Hiranyaksha throws his mace with full force like a tempest at Lord Varaha, and he just catches it like that, you know. And he smiles, and then he's trying to offer it back to the Lord. And he's so angry, and he doesn't want to take it from him. So I'll use another weapon, you know. The Lord's having fun, you know. And as we'll read in the pastime a little later. So after fighting, and Lord Brahma and the demigods are saying, "Oh, finish him off, you know, finish him off, you know. Don't delay, because now, you know, it's going to get dark, and they get more powerful, and all kinds of stuff." So then at the end, he just, with his hoof, he just gives him a clip behind the ear, and that's it, finishes him off. You know? So, of course, the Lord, he likes fighting, but the demons are not really up to the job, so he has to get his own devotees to play the role, you know, like that. Because at least they put in a good effort, you know. So, you know, Jai and Vijay, you know. So, who was it? Jai and Vijay, they took birth as, Ravan and Kumbhakarna? Was it then Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu? Other way around, yeah. Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Ravan, Kumbhakarna, and then Shishupala and Dantavakra. And then they heard about Lord Chaitanya's pastime, and then they thought, well, we were only meant to do three, but we'll do an extra one, you know. just for the fun of it, you know, like that. So, then Jaga and Madhaya. Yeah? So this song here, you know, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ji Ki Jai, Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Shri Varaha Dev Ki Jai. So I'll just read the first four verses, and then we can read the translation, and if we have a little bit of time, we can read from the third canto. There's actually three chapters, you know. I think, what is it? There's three chapters which cover that particular pastime. So this is called the Dash Avatar Stotram, and it's by Jayadev Goswami. It's not our Jayadev up here, but he's a good singer and a drummer as well. So, pralaye prayodi jaledita vanna sivedam vihita vihitra charitam akedam keshavadrita mina sharira jai jagadisha hare jai jagadisha hare jai jagadisha hare Kishitir iha vipula taretishti tava priste dharani dharana krin chakra gariste keshavadrita kurma sharira jai jagadishare jai jagadishare jai jagadishare. And this is the one with Lord Rahade. Vasati dashana shikare dharani tavalagna shishinikalanka kevala nimagna keshavadrita shukara rupa jai jagadisha hare jai jagadisha hare jai jagadisha hare. And this is one that you're all familiar with. Tavakara kamalavarena kamadhuta shengam dalita hiranyakashipu tanubringam keshavadvitam narahari rupam jai jagadisha hare jai jagadisha hare jai jagadisha hare. So some devotees don't know that this Nrisingha Pranam mantra actually comes from this song, you know? So they think, oh, I know that one, but don't know the others, you know. So dashavatara. So if you have time, you can go through and sing it and read the meanings, and it's beautiful. So we'll just read the translations quickly. O Keshava, Lord of the universe, O Lord Hari, who have assumed the form of a fish, all glories to you. You easily acted as a boat in the form of the giant fish, just to give protection to the Vedas, which had become immersed in the turbulent sea of devastation. O Keshava, the Lord of the universe, O Lord Hari, who have assumed the form of a tortoise, all glories to you. In this incarnation as a divine tortoise, the great Mandara mountain rests upon your gigantic back as a pivot for churning the ocean of milk. From holding up the huge mountain, a large scar-like depression is put in your back, which has become most glorious. O Keshava, O Lord of the universe, O Lord Hari, who have assumed the form of a boar, all glories to you. The earth, which had become immersed in the Garbhadak ocean at the bottom of the universe, sits fixed upon the tip of your tusk, just like a spot on the moon. O Keshava, O Lord of the universe, O Lord Hari, who have assumed the form of half man and half lion, all glories to you. Just as one can easily crush a wasp between one's fingernails, so in the same way, the body of the wasp-like demon Hiranyakashipu has been ripped apart by the wonderful pointed nails on your beautiful lotus hand. So, like beautiful verses, beautiful prayers, beautiful pastimes. So there's a lot of nectar to be had if you're a nectar hog. You know? Okay, so the chapters in the Bhagavatam is third canto, chapters 17 to 19, they cover the whole pastime with Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, you know, trying to conquer the universe and giving everyone trouble like the demons usually do, you know. And then Lord Brahma is getting worried, and then he's asking Krishna to come and sort them out, you know. So we'll see how much. There's a lot. We'll maybe just read whatever we can. So this it says, you're skilled in war that I do not see. Yeah, actually, yeah. So the earth had, Hiranyaksha had taken so much gold out of the earth that the earth had lost its orbit and fallen down into the bottom of the Garbhadak ocean. And then Hiranyaksha was causing trouble all over the place. And then he went in the ocean and he went to the residence of Varuna, Vibhavari, the capital of Varuna, and then he wanted to fight with Varuna. He said, you know, come on, give me a fight, you know. So Varuna said, well, you know, I'm getting old now, I'm not fighting anymore. He basically said, you know, there's somebody that will sort you out, you know. you better go and find Lord Vishnu. He'll do the needful, you know, to help out your regression, you know. So he says here, so this is, I think, Varuna speaking. He says, let's have a look. Maybe it's, okay. You are skilled in war that I do not see anyone else but the most ancient person, Lord Vishnu, who can give satisfaction in battle to you. Therefore, O chief of the Asuras, approach him whom even heroes like you mentioned with praise. You know? Varuna continued, on reaching him, you will rid your pride at once and will lie down in the field of battle surrounded by dogs for eternal sleep. It is in order to exterminate wicked fellows like you and to show his grace to the virtuous that he assumes his various incarnations like Varaha Dev, you know. So then Varuna is telling him, Hiranyaksha, you know, he said, go and fight with him, you know, go and fight with Vishnu. then he'll give you what you're due, you know. So we'll try and read what we can quickly. Maitreya continued, the proud and falsely glorious Daita paid little heed to the words of Varuna. O dear Vidura, he learned from Narad the whereabouts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and hurriedly betook himself to the depths of the ocean. So Narad is always, you know, he's the, you know, giving away the secrets. He's the catalyst. Of course, he's not worried about the Lord being defeated. He just wants to see more pastimes. So he saw there the all-powerful Personality of Godhead in his boar incarnation, bearing the earth upward on the ends of his tusk and robbing him of his splendor with his reddish eyes. The demon laughed. Oh, an amphibious beast. Okay, so the demon addressed the Lord, O best of the demigods, dressed in the form of a boar, just hear me. This earth is entrusted to us, the inhabitants of the lower regions, and you cannot take it from my presence and not be hurt by me. You know? You rascal, you have been nourished by your enemies to kill us, and you have killed some demons by remaining invisible. O fool, your power is only mystic. So today I shall enliven my kinsmen by killing you. This is Hiranyaksha speaking to Lord Varaha. So the demon continued, when you fall dead with your skull smashed by the mace held by my arms, the demigods and sages who offer you oblations and sacrifice in devotional service will also automatically cease to exist like trees without roots. Although the Lord was pained by the shaft-like abusive words of the demon, he bore the pain. But seeing that the earth on the ends of his tusk was frightened, he rose after the water just as an elephant emerges with its female companion when assailed by an alligator. The demon, who had golden hair on his head and fearful tusk, gave chase to the Lord while he was rising from the water, even as an alligator would chase an elephant. Roaring like thunder, he said, are you not ashamed of running away before a challenging adversary? There is nothing reproachable for shameless creatures. You know? The Lord placed the earth within his sight on the surface of the water and transferred to her his own energy in the form of the ability to float on the water. While the enemy stood looking on, Brahma, the creator of the universe, extolled the Lord, and the other demons rained flowers on him. The demon, who had a wealth of ornaments, bangles, and beautiful golden armor on his body, chased the Lord from behind with a great mace. The Lord tolerated his piercing ill words, but in order to reply to him, he expressed his terrible anger. The Personality of Godhead said, indeed, we are creatures of the jungle, and we are searching after hunting dogs like you. One who is freed from the entanglement of death has no fear from the loose talk in which you are indulging, for you are bound up by the laws of death. Certainly, we have stolen the charge of the inhabitants of Rasatala and have lost all shame. Although bitten by your powerful mace, I shall stay here in the water for some time, because having created enmity with the powerful enemy, I now have no place to go. You are supposed to be the commander of many foot soldiers, and now you may take prompt steps to withdraw. You may take prompt steps to overthrow us. Give up all your foolish talk and wipe out the cares of kith and kin by slaying us. One may be proud, yet he does not deserve a seat in an assembly if he fails to fulfill his promised word. Sri Maitreya said, the demon, being thus challenged by the Personality of Godhead, became angry and agitated as if he wasn't before. And he trembled in anger like a challenged cobra. So, hissing indignantly, all his senses shaken by wrath, the demon quickly sprang upon the Lord and dealt him a blow with his powerful mace. The Lord, however, moving slightly aside, dodged the violent mace blow aimed at his breast by the enemy, just as an accomplished yogi would elude death. The personality of God had now exhibited his anger and rushed to meet the demon, who bit his lip in rage and took up his mace again and began to repeatedly brandish it about. Then, with the mace, the Lord struck the enemy on the right of his brow, but since the demon was expert in fighting, O gentle Vidura, he protected himself by a maneuver of his own mace. In this way, the demon Hiranyaksha and the Lord, the personality of God, had struck each other with their huge maces, each enraged and seeking his own victory. There was keen rivalry between the two combatants. Both had sustained injuries on their bodies from the blows of each other's pointed maces, and each grew more and more enraged at the smell of blood on his person. In their eagerness to win, they performed maneuvers of various kinds, and thus their contest looked like an encounter between two forceful bulls for the sake of a cow. O descendant of Kuru, Brahma, the most independent demigod of the universe, accompanied by his followers, came to see the terrible fight for the sake of the world between the demon and the personality of Godhead, who appeared in the form of a boar. After arriving at the place of combat, Brahma, the leader of thousands of sages and transcendentalists, saw the demon, who had attained such unprecedented power that no one could fight with him. Brahma then addressed Narayan, who was assuming the form of a boar for the first time. Lord Brahma said, "My dear Lord, this demon has proved to be a constant pinprick to the demigods and Brahmins, the cows and innocent persons who are spotless and always dependent upon worshipping your lotus feet. He has become a source of fear by unnecessarily harassing them. Since he has attained a boon from me, he has become a demon, always searching for a proper combatant, wandering all over the universe for this infamous purpose." Lord Brahma continued, "My dear Lord, there is no need to play with this serpentine demon, who is always very skilled in conjuring tricks and is arrogant, self-sufficient and most wicked." Brahma continued, "My dear Lord, you are infallible. Please kill this sinful demon before the demoniac hour arrives and he presents another formidable approach favorable to him. You can kill him by your transcendental potency without doubt. The auspicious period known as Abhijit, which is the most opportune for victory, commenced at midday and has all but passed. Therefore, in the interest of your friends, please dispose of this formidable foe quickly. The demon, luckily for us, has come of his own accord to you. His death ordained by you, therefore exhibiting your ways, kill him in the duel and establish the world in peace." Sri Maitreya said, after hearing the words of Brahma, the creator, which were free from all sinful purposes and as sweet as nectar, the Lord heartily laughed and accepted his prayer with a glance laden with love. The Lord, who had appeared from the nostril of Brahma, sprang and aimed his mace at the chin of his enemy, the Hiranyaksha demon, who was stalking fearlessly before him. Struck by the demon's mace, however, the Lord's mace slipped from his hand and looked splendid as it fell down whirling. This was miraculous, for the mace was blazing wonderfully. Even though the demon had excellent opportunity to strike his unarmed foe without obstruction, he respected the law of single combat, thereby kindling the fury of the Supreme Lord. As the Lord's mace fell to the ground and a cry of alarm arose from the witnessing crowd of gods and rishis, the personality of Godhead acknowledged the demon's love of righteousness and therefore invoked his Sudarshan discus. As the discus began to revolve in the Lord's hands and the Lord contended at close quarters with the chief of his Vaikuntha attendants, who had been born as Hiranyaksha, a vile son of Diti, there issued from every direction strange expressions uttered by those who are witnessing from airplanes. They had no knowledge of the Lord's reality, and they cried, "May victory attend you, pray, dispatch him, play no more with him." You know, they were getting worried, you know, and anxious. When the demon saw the personality of Godhead, who had eyes just like lotus petals, standing in a position before him, armed with the Sudarshan disc, His senses were overpowered by indignation, and he began to hiss like a serpent, and he bit his lip in great resentment. The demon, who had fearful tusks, stared at the personality of Godhead as though to burn him. Springing into the air, he aimed his mace at the Lord, exclaiming at the same time, "You are slain." And, O saintly Vidura, while his enemy looked on, the Lord, in his boar form, the enjoyer of all sacrificial offerings, playfully knocked down the mace with his left foot, even as it came upon him with the force of a tempest. The Lord then said, "Take up your weapon and try again, eager as you are to conquer me." Challenging these words, the demon aimed his mace at the Lord and once more loudly roared. When the Lord saw the mace flying towards him, he stood firmly where he was and caught it with the same ease as Garuda, the king of birds, would catch a serpent. His valor thus frustrated, the great demon felt humiliated and was put out of countenance. He was reluctant to take back the mace when it was offered to him by the personality of Godhead. He now took a trident, which was rapacious as a flaming fire, and hurled it against the Lord, the enjoyer of all sacrifices, even as one would use penance for a not malevolent purpose against the holy Brahmana. Hurled by the mighty demon with all his strength, the flying trident shone brightly in the sky, and the personality of Godhead, however, tore it to pieces with his Sudarshan disc, which had a sharp edge, rim, even as Indra cut off the wing of Garuda. The demon was enraged with his trident, was cut to pieces by the discus of the personality of Godhead. He therefore advanced towards the Lord and, roaring aloud, struck his hard fist against the Lord's broad chest, which bore the mark of Srivasta. Then he went out of sight. So then after that, he did some trickery. You know, he went invisible and throwing stuff and creating more demons and all kinds of other stuff. O sinless Vidura, mountains discharged weapons and various kinds of naked demonesses armed with tridents appeared with their hair hanging loose. Quite terrible. The cruel and savage, the Lord, the personal enjoyer of all sacrifice, now discharged his beloved Sudarshan, which was capable of dispelling the magical forces displayed by the demon. And at that very moment, a shudder ran through the heart of Diti, the mother of Hiranyaksha. She recalled the words of her husband, Kashyapa, and blood flowed from her breast, because she realized her son's going to be killed. But when the demon saw the magic forces dispelled, he once again came into the presence of the personality of Godhead, Keshwa, and full rage tried to embrace him with his arms to crush him, but to his great amazement, he found the Lord standing outside the circle of his arms. The demon now began to strike the Lord with his hard fist, but the Lord Adokshita slapped him in the root of his ear, even as Indra, the Lord of the Maruts, hits the demon, Vritta. Though struck indifferently by the Lord, the demon's body began to wheel, his eyes bulged out and of their sockets, his arms and legs broken, and the hair on his head scattered. He fell down dead like a gigantic tree uprooted by the wind. Shivaraha Deva Ki. Yeah. So I'll just finish with a benediction at the end of this, because you've been listening to the pastime. This most sacred narrative confers extraordinary merit, wealth, fame, longevity, and all the objects of one's desire on the field of battle. It promotes the strength of one's vital organs and the organs of action. One who listens to it at the last moment of his life is transferred to the supreme abode of the Lord, O dear Shonaka. So Prabhupada says, devotees are generally attracted by the narrative and pastimes of the Lord, even though they do not prosecute austerities or meditation in This very process of hearing attentively from the pastimes of the Lord will endow them with innumerable benefits such as wealth, fame, longevity, and other desirable aims of life. If one continues to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, which is full of narratives of the pastime of the Lord, at the end of his life, one is sure to be transferred to the eternal transcendental abode of the Lord. Thus, hearers are benefited both ultimately and for as long as they are in the material world. That is the supreme, sublime result of engaging in devotional service. So it goes on then, the five processes of devotional service. So anyway, that's, I think I've gone quite a bit over time there, but anyway, that's normal for me. That's why they don't get me on very often. So we'll stop there. And Shiva Rahadeva ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Iskon Guru Vrinda ki, Nitai Gaur Premanandi, Haribol.